We are the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short.
Hello, welcome to the In Conversation series for the Association of Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Dr. Seanich Anderson. I'm a chartered research psychologist and neurodiversity consultant with expertise in Tourette syndrome. I'm excited to be here today as part of our series of podcasts that ACAM is hosting on Tourette syndrome. And over the course of this series, we've been looking at the evidence-based research about Tourette syndrome and other tic disorders, as well as the education, treatments, and the influences of the pandemic and social media. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Maddie Groom, who is Director of CANDAL and Associate Professor in Applied Neurodevelopmental Cognitive Neuroscience at the Institute of Mental Health at the University of Nottingham. So firstly, just to explain that CANDAL stands for the Centre for ADHD and Neurodevelopmental Disorders Across the Lifespan. Maddie, thank you so much for speaking with me today. It's great to have you here, and I know that you are involved in a great many research projects about neurodevelopmental disorders. But today we're going to focus on a current research project about tics and Tourette syndrome called INTEND. And INTEND stands for Improving Tic Services in England, which sounds very timely. Can you tell us about the ideas behind this project, please?
Sure, yes. Thanks for inviting me to take part in this, Seanich. It's great to have an opportunity to talk more about this research. So we know that in many regions of England, children and young people with tics and Tourette syndrome are often unable to access healthcare services for their tics. They experience long delays before being given a diagnosis. And even once they get that diagnosis, they may be then unable to access treatment or other support, which, as you can imagine, has a huge impact on the children and young people, their families and friends, and also the wider systems that support them, including schools.
Okay, so just to explain to listeners that may not be working with children and young people, that tics are fast, repetitive muscle movements that can result in sudden and difficult to control body jolts or sounds. And common examples include blinking or twitching of the eyes, wrinkling the nose or grimacing, or moving the tongue. And tics are involuntary and often distressing. They can be simple ones or more complex. And when both motor and vocal tics are present and last for more than a year, the disorder is named Tourette syndrome. And if people are listening who are interested in finding out more information about tics and tic disorders like Tourette syndrome, then ACAM has a topic guide on their website that gives a great overview of new developments in research as well as treatment. And that is available on the ACAM website. So Maddie, can you tell us a little bit more about how the INTEND project is funded and when it launched, etc.?
We received funding from the National Institute for Health and Care Research, the NIHR, who funded this project for a period of 16 months, and we just started on the 1st of November 2023.
So you and I have both been working in this field of Tourette syndrome for a number of years. And it's definitely a common theme that we hear from people with tics and Tourette syndrome and their families who are seeking diagnosis and treatment about the difficulty accessing healthcare service. And so this seems like a very helpful research project to be involved in. I know that when I run behavioral therapy for tics training for healthcare professionals, they often ask about clinical pathways, and we hear from clinicians who want to set up new services or be able to better treat and support people with tics and Tourette syndrome. So I guess that will hopefully be one of the aims of this project as well.
Yes, absolutely. We're really aware that obviously this really impacts the children and young people and their families. They're really struggling, really finding it difficult to know where to turn for support. But equally, we know that healthcare professionals are feeling perhaps lacking in confidence in this area. So they may see children and young people with tics, but not always know how to assess or help them manage their tics. So yes, we really hope that this project will provide people with clearer information, clearer guidance on how to assess and manage tics, and also link them in with appropriate training and resources as well.
I'm excited to also be involved in the research project as well, working on the PPI, the public and patient involvement side as well. And we've got a group of the parents and young people who will feedback and help guide the research project as well. And you mentioned about healthcare professionals working with children and young people. They'll be involved in the project as well. Can you explain a bit about that?
We're involving healthcare professionals in a number of ways in this research. We have healthcare professionals as part of our team. So they're advising us and guiding us on how we run the study and how we make sure that the findings are clinically meaningful and relevant. But we're also reaching out to the population of healthcare professionals in a couple of ways. The first way that people can get involved is to take part in our national survey. We're asking healthcare professionals who have any level of experience working with children and young people with tics and Tourette's syndrome to take part in an online survey and tell us about their experiences of trying to carry out assessment and treatment of tics, whether they feel confident in doing so, have they had any training, and do they have any training needs in this area. And we hope this will give us a really comprehensive picture of the national level of experience and training gap in terms of assessing and treating children and young people with tics and Tourette's syndrome. So that's one way that people can get involved. And then the other way that we're reaching out to healthcare professionals is that we're looking for experts in the assessment and treatment of tics and Tourette's in children and young people to consult with them and work with them to develop an expert recommendation for how tics and Tourette's should be managed. So what's the ideal care pathway for these children and young people? And from this, we will then go on to develop some recommendations that we share with services and ICBs around the country. So yeah, very much keen and interested in working with healthcare professionals in this particular research project.
Hopefully, we will have an audience of healthcare professionals listening to this podcast as well, and they can get involved. I think it's interesting in regards to the first part, the survey that you mentioned. It's important that we reach out to clinical healthcare professionals who may not consider themselves experts, but they do even occasionally see children with tics. We're looking for their input as well. I think I hope that people won't sort of count themselves out of the research because they think, oh, well, I do see children with tics, but not that often. Would you agree with that?
We want to get a range of views and experience, and it may be that some healthcare professionals work in a service that only occasionally receives referrals or sees children with tics or Tourette syndrome. But nonetheless, we want to hear about their experiences. You know, perhaps they're presented with a case in clinic. They may have very little experience of trying to carry out an assessment for tics. And we want to know about that. We want to know, you know, if people are struggling to do this, if they have those training needs, then this will help us identify where those gaps are. And we can plug in some recommendations around training as part of our recommended guidelines when we develop them.
And when we talk about healthcare professionals, that's obviously a sort of wide umbrella term, but, you know, it makes me think about professionals working in CAMHS. So could be psychologists, nurses, therapists, etc. It can be a whole different variety of healthcare professionals that could complete that survey.
Including occupational therapists, speech and language therapists, psychiatrists, and also a range of experience and levels within each of those professions as well. So yes, absolutely, it's a very broad approach in experience and training needs amongst a range of different healthcare professionals.
And what about the other professionals in the NHS as well? Once you've created these recommendations, who will that be shared with? I'm thinking about commissioners, for example. Is that you're going to get feedback from them as well about the recommendations that you're going to create through the project?
Yes, absolutely. And we've started that process already, actually. Our plan is that we consult regularly with, you know, the people who will ultimately want to hear about this research and want to be able to design and deliver services in line with the recommendations that we develop. So we've started already reaching out to some of those groups. We're holding regional workshops in specific parts of the region to talk to those with responsibility for designing and delivering services in this area. So we're going to tell them about our research, tell them what we're doing, and then when we do have those recommendations developed and in place, then we will go back and share those with them. But also it's partly a consultation with them to identify, you know, what barriers might they face in adjusting their services for children and young people with tics. What do we need to take account of when we develop our recommendations? So it's very much this two-way communication between ourselves and the people on the ground in healthcare services to understand how best to make these recommendations work.
There'll be a link associated with this podcast for people to go and complete the survey, which I think takes about 10 to 15 minutes to complete. It's not too onerous.
No, it's not too onerous. It probably takes a bit longer the more experience somebody's got. But yes, it has been designed to be short and manageable and really, yeah, just capture that breadth of experience out there.
And then this other expert survey called a Delphi survey. Can you be a bit more specific about the sort of experts there? So these are people that would more regularly see children with tics and tic disorders as part of their work. That's the Delphi survey that you would be looking for them to complete.
Yes, that's right. So this is a slightly different type of survey. And we're looking, as you say, for people who quite regularly work with children and young people with tics and Tourette's as part of their role. And the reason for that is that we want people who are immersed in services, see how these services are working currently for these children and young people, maybe have some understanding of the national picture as well, and therefore also have some ideas and views and perceptions on how things could be improved. And, you know, in their role, what would they like to see done differently in the service they work in? It's also a slightly bigger commitment from people because there's three iterations of the survey, and we will go back to the same experts for each iteration of the survey. But we feel that the gains that can come from that involvement in this particular survey are really significant because people are helping to shape change in healthcare services for these children and young people.
I think definitely worth that time commitment. We've heard from people having to wait many, many months, if not years, even to try and get a diagnosis and subsequent treatment.
What we're hoping to see from this project, that we develop a sort of recommended service model and that we can then introduce that nationally, recognising that there may well be some barriers in some regions to implementation, but then very much taking that as a sort of a challenge to be solved and working with those regional experts to ensure that implementation is as effective as possible.
And what's complete? I mean, something that sticks in my mind is that for tics and Tourette syndrome at the moment, there are no NICE guidelines in the UK. So the National Institute of Clinical Excellence produces guidelines on different health conditions, but none for tics and tic disorders.
It's really startling to see the difference between tic disorders and other conditions that affect children quite a lot, such as ADHD, which has very careful, clear, structured guidance. There's nothing of that nature for tics and Tourette syndrome, which we know compounds the problem because professionals may not know how best to approach that assessment or treatment, and they don't then have those NICE clinical guidelines to consult either.
It may be a bit of a myth or a misunderstanding that hopefully is more and more in the past, but I think there may have been a misunderstanding in the past that tics were quite rare. But in fact, the prevalence figures we have says that about 1% of the population have a tic disorder like Tourette syndrome. So in fact, not rare.
And actually, that's the diagnosed prevalence. We know that there are more cases that don't reach the attention of healthcare services, either because they're kind of managing them in the community or because they can't access services. So the true prevalence of chronic tic disorders is likely to be higher than we are aware at the moment.
Maddie, thank you so much for speaking with me today, and hopefully this has been helpful for many of the people listening as well. Can you just highlight again for us, anyone who's interested in taking part in either of the surveys or finding out more about the project in itself, we can have some information on the ACAM web pages, but also you're on Twitter as well, so people can reach you that way?
Yeah, so they can follow me on at MJ Groom, and we do post the links to our surveys very regularly. We also have information available on the Candle website as well, which we can post links to. So yeah, a variety of ways to follow our work and get involved.
That's great. And so that's at MJGROOM at MG Groom on Twitter as well. So thank you ever so much, Maddie. This has been really fascinating. You can also follow me, Dr. Shonich Anderson, on Twitter at ShonichAnderson2. And you can also visit my website, www.neurodiverse.org. For more details on Tourette syndrome, you can visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org. And you can follow them on social media by searching ACAM, A-C-A-M-H. Thank you so much for listening.